Okay, good evening. This is Parshas Korach, Tavshin Ayin Ches, and we shall start on page 820 in the Art Scroll. And the Pasuk begins, this is again, page 820, Perek Tazayin, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 16, verse 1, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi. Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kas, the son of Levi, took V'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliyav, and dasan and aviram, the sons of Eliyav, v'ein ben Peles, and a man named Ein ben Peles, the son of Peles, b'nei Ruvain, they were sons of Ruvain, from the tribe of Ruvain. And as we know, they basically rose up against Moshe Rabbeinu, and basically complained about why it was Aaron the Kohen Gadol, and if everybody wants to be a Kohen Gadol, then everyone has the right to be a Kohen Gadol. So Rashi tells us, what exactly, how did everything come about? What happened here that Korach decided to lead this rebellion? So Rashi tells us, this is Rashi on the right column, it's 2, 4, 6 lines from the bottom, or actually, yeah, 2, 6 lines from the bottom, the Rashi in the right column. What made Korach see fit to argue with Moshe, to cause a quarrel with Moshe? Niskani al nasi usei shal yitzafa ben Uziel. He became jealous over the Nesias, over the princehood of Eliezer ben Uziel. Sheminohu Moshe nasi abnei kahas api adibur. Moshe appointed Eliezer ben Uziel as the prince of the family of Kahas. There were three families of the tribe of Levi, Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. Each one of those families had a nasi, had a prince, the one who was in charge of that section of the tribe, that family of the tribe. And Moshe had appointed a man named Eliezer ben Uziel as the prince over the family of Kahas, Apia Dibor, by the command of Hashem. Omar Korach said, Achi Abba Arba Hayu, there were four brothers in my father's family. Shenar Bnei Kahas, as the Pasuk says, the sons of Kahas were Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Those were the four sons of Kahas. Amra Bachar, Amram the firstborn, Natlu Shnei Ban of Gedula. Two of his sons took the highest positions, Echad Melech v'Echad Kohen Gadol. One's the king, one's the high priest. Moshe's the king, but Aaron is the high priest. Bira Letel Es Hashnia. So who should get at least the next position? Lo Yani, should it not be me? Shani ben Yitzhar Shusheni LaAmram. I am the son of Yitzhar, who is the second son in line after Amram. V'hu Mina Nasias ben Achiv Akatam Mikulam. And who did he appoint as the prince? The son of the youngest son. Because it's Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. It was Eliezer ben Uziel, Eliezer, the son of the youngest son, that got the prince of the tribe of Plymouth with Gus. Basically, that ticked off Korach, and he said, already, Chaylik Olav, Mavatal Es Devarav. I'm going to quarrel with him, and I'm going to nullify his words. Meaning, Eliezer ben Uziel's appointment, it was what made him jealous, and that jealousy turned him against Moshe, but turned him against Moshe, not only regarding that appointment of Eliezer, but regarding any appointment that Moshe had made. Those appointments, of course, were al pi al dibur, were based on Hashem's command, and Korach was saying, nope, couldn't have been. That was it. That was the bait, and that would be his argument. Okay. Now, I want to share with you a really interesting parable that I saw to explain this, what happened here to Korach. We're talking about here that Korach, what we know that Korach was a very great man. The Midrashim, the Gemara says he was a very great person. And Rashi is telling us that what was it that made him go wrong? What was the shortcoming in him that turned everything around? His jealousy. That's what did it to him. He was jealous of his cousin, and that made him turn against Moshe Rabbeinu and actually become an apikoros, become a heretic, denying the validity of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. So I saw a very interesting parable. Parable goes, well, actually it starts with explaining a Gemara. The Gemara says that the Yetzer Hara, evil inclination, is compared to a fly. So to explain that Gemara, the following parable I saw. The parable goes that there was a man who had a house, he had a very nice house, and very nice house, and he was approached by a stranger. And the stranger basically offered to buy his house for $1 million, okay? It was a fair market price for the house, $1 million for the house, but the man refused. You know, he liked his house. He had no intention of selling. So the stranger persists and says, all right, I won't take the whole house. I'll just rent the room. And you know what I'll give you for the room? I'll give you $500,000. The man still refuses, pushes him off. The stranger is not giving up. He says, okay, all I want is a bed. I want to take a whole room. Just give me a bed. $250,000. And the man says, nope, I'm not doing it. No matter what, this is my house. I love it. I'm not doing it. Finally, the stranger says, all right, you see that wall? I want a spot on that wall. And for the spot on the wall, I'll give you $125,000. So the man says, spot on the wall, $125,000. Let's go for it. Deal's made. They write up a document and he specifies, you know, the spot on the wall that he's buying for $125,000. Okay, the stranger leaves. The man takes his money. He's the happiest man around. 2 o'clock in the morning, bang, bang, bang on the door. Who's there? The stranger. The stranger says, what do you want? What do you want? He says, I need my spot on the wall now. And he walks over to the spot. And he takes a nail and he bangs in a nail. Okay, what is he supposed to do? He's got a right to get to a spot, right? Okay, the next night, again, 2 o'clock in the morning, bang on the door. The man walks in and he says, what do you want now? He says, I want to hang up something. That's my spot. I want to hang up something on it. And he goes and he hangs up a very distasteful picture on the wall. And he says, the man says, what are you doing here? What are you doing? He says, this is my spot. I bought it. I own it. I can do with it whatever I want. And every night this goes on. And every night he comes in the middle of the night. And every night he puts on a more distasteful picture. Until the man says, you know what? I'll give you $1,000,000. Just get out of here. And he says, sorry, this is my spot. I'm not going anywhere. Until the man just abandons his house and runs away. So the mashal is the Yetzer Hara approaches a person and tries to make him abandon the Torah. The man says, what are you kidding? I'm not going to abandon the Torah. Okay, how about Shabbos? How about Kashrus? What are you kidding? But the Yetzer Hara at the end, he finds one little thing. Finds a little spot. He finds one little spot of vulnerability. And he gets himself in that little spot. And once he's in, he makes problems. He makes trouble. That one little spot, that one spot of vulnerability the Yetzer Hara gets into, that can affect everything. And that's what happened. And that's the mashal's parable to the fly. A fly is annoying. It's persistent. Doesn't give up. And it always goes after you where it's harder for you to get it. That's what it means the Yetzer Hara is like a fly. And that would be the explanation to what happened to Korach. The one thing that Korach lacked in. What was the one thing that he lacked in? Or where did the Yetzer Hara penetrate? Where did it get hold of him? Kinna, jealousy. Jealousy, okay, not a good trait, right? But, you know, it's not telling him to give up the Torah, it's not telling him to worship about the Zara, it's not telling him to anything major, a little jealousy. But once the Yetzer Hara gets a foot in, even in something, and even in a small spot, like jealousy, the effects of that can have repercussions in the entire person. One level of jealousy, one bit of jealousy for Elit Safin turned Korach into a rebel against Moshe and against the Torah. And that's just a way of understanding, of getting a very interesting insight to this idea that the jealousy of Korach did him in. It did him in. You could always think to yourself and say, well, you know, jealousy is a very powerful thing. It is a powerful thing. But it's actually, if you follow this parable, then what it really is that, yeah, jealousy is a very powerful thing. Something, a small bit of jealousy can be very powerful. And perhaps a small bit of anything can be very powerful. Not just jealousy. A small thing of a lot of things can be powerful. And that's the approach. That's the way the Yetzer Hara attacks. Something, it takes a small vulnerability that a person has, sets himself in, and once he sets himself in, he can cause lots of trouble and just overtake the person and bring their downfall. What do you want to say?
Well, it's interesting that not only he went against Moshe, just did not believe him, but also sort of he lost common sense because he knew how powerful Moshe was. He knew how, and that he sort of
okay. Yeah. That works too. That works up. That would work right into this. Okay, so that's an interesting mushel that had. You know, years back when I was learning in Yeshiva Philadelphia, and I don't even know if it's out of high school yet, but I one time approached the Yeshiva Rebbe Yeshvei Zatzal, and I wasn't yet even in post high school, so it was a very trepidating experience. And I don't remember what I spoke to him about, but I spoke to him about jealousy, I guess. Because he told me a very interesting idea. He told me from the Altar von Keller, Simchas Yisrael Ziv, can't say I've seen it, I ever saw it inside, but he told me from him that Korach's mistake or Korach's downfall was that, you know, when a person works in spirituality, you start at level Aleph, right? You start at Aleph, and you go to Beis, you go to Gimel. When you go to Beis, that doesn't say you're done with Aleph. It doesn't mean you're done with Aleph when you get to Beis. Beis doesn't say, well, I'm at Beis, I don't have to worry about Aleph anymore. When you get to Beis, you've got to go back, you got to keep working on Aleph and Beis. When you get to Gimel, you have to keep working on Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. Of course, at different levels in different ways. But it's not when you get to a certain point, you forget about everything else. You always have to be aware to constantly be working on all the levels, even on the lowest levels. Because if you don't keep even working and being aware of the lowest level, that could bring you down. Now, another interesting, once we're talking about this trait of kin, of jealousy that Korach had, so if, you know, knowing the story here with Korach, which again, Rashi says the problem with Korach was, he became jealous, he wasn't made the Nasi of the family of Kohas. The Ibn Ezra writes that the problem is that we know that when the Levim were chosen, they were basically chosen to be subservient to the Kohanim. Right? They are there to be at the service of the Kohanim. And that's how they're looked upon. Korach didn't like that. Korach didn't like being subservient to anyone. And therefore, that's what led him. But whatever you're going to say, clearly, Korach was not satisfied with his place in life. It wasn't good enough. Things weren't good enough. And that's very often a source of jealousy. We see what other people have. And we say to ourselves, you know, why don't we have it? We deserve it just as much. And the true antidote to jealousy is emunah, is our faith and trust in Hashem. Hashem runs everything in our lives, and wherever He puts us or gives us is what He knows is for our best. What we have is what we need and what's for our best, and what we don't have is not what we need, and being without it is our best. And that's the challenge of envy, that's the challenge of jealousy, and that depends on how we work on our emunah, our faith and trust in Hashem. Rabbi Freyhand has a very interesting thought that brings out this idea in a very poignant way. So if we take a look, let's take a look back at the Seres HaDibros. Let's look back at Parashas Yisro. And let's take a look on page 412. The Pasuk Yudalid, where it says, Leisachmed Beisri Echa, 412. Leisachmed Beisri Echa, you shall not covet the house of your friend. Leisachmed Eishes Reyecha, you shall not covet your friend's wife. Va'avdei Va'masai, his servant and his maidservant. The Shoyrei V'chamayrei, his ox and his donkey, V'chor L'asher V'yecha, and everything that your friend has. So the Torah gets very specific, don't covet this, this, and this, and anything your friend has. So Rav Freyhand brought a thought from the Satmar Rav Zatzal. It's a homiletical interpretation, but it's very powerful. And the Pasuk is saying, do not covet your friend's wife, his servant, his animals, and anything that he has. Anything that he has means to say like this. You know, every person goes through life with what we call in Yiddish a pekel, a load, a burden. Right? No one walks around life without some kind of a bundle of tzaras.
What's the Yiddish word?
Pekel. Okay? It means to pack a package, a load, right? Everybody has in life something, right? There's some kind of a bundle of grief that someone has. Everybody has it. And we tend to think that, you know, we've got, there is one bundle of good things and there's one bundle of grief, and they're just two separate, they're two separate compartments, they're not dependent on each other. And the Sa'at Merav said, that's not the way it goes. It's not the way it goes. They both go together. It's not, it's a per, Hashem gives a person what the person is comfortable with, and he's very specific in what he gives him that is comfortable with. And Hashem is very specific in the grief that that a person gets. And if you want to be like someone, you can't choose and say, oh, I only want the good things. Because if you want to be him, if you want his good things, you got to get the bad things also. They're not separate. They're not separate cheshbonos. They're not two separate things that don't go together. Everything goes together. So if you're going to covet a person and want something that you like, you can't pick and choose and say, oh, I want that. I don't want anything else. They have to go together. And that's what the Torah was saying when it says, v'chol asher le'yecha, don't covet everything that your friend has. If you're going to covet, you know what else you have to be coveting? All his tzaras, all his problems also. And there's an old Yiddish saying, I don't mean Yiddish, but there's an old saying that goes that, you know, if everybody be brought to a room and they're to be told, okay, take all your tzaras and throw it on a table, like, take it off, throw them all on the table, and then take whichever ones you want.
Oh,
which ones would you take? The answer is, you would rush to take back yours. You rush to take back yours. So that was that's the idea that he was saying, v'chala shalom yacha. Don't covet everything. You're going to covet. You can't just covet and say, I want one thing. You have to take the whole package. And that is to say, and this is another level of this idea that whatever Hashem gives us is what he calculates is for our best. And whatever he gives us is not just the good things, the things that we're comfortable with, or the things that we lack. It's the tzaras, it's the problems also. It's all part of the package deal. Everything that we have is from Hashem with a cheshbon as to why we need it and why it's best for us, but they all go together. You can't separate things. So if you're going to be jealous about somebody else's good things, well, you know, just remember there's another part, everybody has another part to them that comes along. And therefore, you know, don't be careful. Don't, what's the Chinese saying? Be careful, you may get what you wish for.
Yeah, I think
something like that, some kind of saying like that. But that's just another insight into the whole idea. You know, the insight is always, well, Hashem gives us what I need and what I don't have, I don't need. Yeah, that's very true. And guess what? There's another part. There's the tzaras part. And the tzaras comes together. It's all one package deal. And if you're jealous of someone, remember, you can't just take one thing. You got to take everything. Okay. So now let's go back to the parasha. And let's take a look now. Let's skip a few psukim. Let's go two lines from the bottom. Pasuk Dalet, page 820, Pasuk Dalet. Vayishma Moshe vayipol al panav. Moshe heard and he fell on his face. Where basically, Korach is saying, you know, everybody's holy, Hashem is in their midst. Why do you raise yourselves up above everyone? Moshe finds himself in a very difficult situation. He doesn't respond. He falls on his face, Rashi says.
He's very upset.
He doesn't, he has a hard time responding right away. Vayidaber al Korach v'kol hadasa leimar, he spoke to Korach and his entire assembly saying, excuse me, Boker v'yayda Hashem es asher loy, in the morning, Hashem will make known who is to him, v'es HaKadosh, and the Holy One, v'hikri ve'ilav, and he shall bring him close to him. V'es asher yibchar bo Yaakov ve'ilav, and the one that he chooses is the one that he will bring close to him. So we got to take, let's take a look again at Rashi. This is Rashi on page 822. And Rashi there, this is Rashi in the right column, three lines from the top. The first word of the line, Umedrashai. The Midrashic interpretation to this word, Boiker. Hashem, Moshe says to Korach, Boiker, in the morning Hashem will make known who is his chosen one. So Umedrashai, the Midrashic interpretation, Boiker, the word on the word morning, Amar Lahem Moshe. Moshe said to Korach, Gavulais Chalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bailamai. Hashem has created boundaries, limits in his world. Can you switch over morning to night? Going to be able to go ahead and this, if the same way you can change morning tonight, you're able to change this to take Aaron away from being the Kohen Gadol. Shenema v'erva hiboyker v'yavdel. Okay, the Medrash was saying that Hashem was saying to Korach and to his entire assembly, and it's a message to all of Klal Yisrael for all generations, that the point is that Hashem has made boundaries. There's a time for, there's a place for morning, there's a place for night. They don't go into the other one's domain. There are specific domains that Hashem has established in the physical world. And those domains and those separations and those limitations are all Hashem's calculation for what the world needs. In the spiritual world, there are also separations. There are also boundaries. There are also separate domains. There's a domain for Kohanim, and there's a domain for not Kohanim. And in the domain of the Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol belongs there, and no one else belongs there. In the same way, you cannot change the boundary of the limitations of day and night, you cannot change limitations of the service of the Kohen Gadol from Aaron to anybody else. It's boundaries. It's part of the spiritual nature of the world. Just like the physical nature has its limitations, the spiritual nature of the world has its limitations. And therefore, you've got your Kohanim, and the Kohanim could do their things that other people can't, even within the Kohanim of the Kohen Gadol, that he has his specific things that he can do where the Kohanim can't. The Leviim have certain things they can do and they can't. Yisraelim even more. There are boundaries. Korach was trying to upset the boundaries, trying to tear down the walls, as is a popular saying. You got to tear down the walls. You got to tear down the separations. But that's not the way it is. Korach has a story where Hashem said, Hashem, the same way in the physical world, Hashem has created boundaries and limitations, so too it's that way in the spiritual world. And the problem is that typically we look at limitations and separations as, well, if he can do it and I can't, then I'm the lesser of the person. There's something lesser about me. There's something missing in me, something wrong with me. He's better than me. I'm considered less than him for not being able to be there. And the lesson of Korach is, no, that's not what it is. It's not what it is. No one's less than the other person. The Ribbono Shel Olam has his parameters. And there are spiritual parameters. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam has put a person in a situation where he's a Kohen, then that's his place. And if you weren't made to be a Kohen, then that's not your place. But you're not less of a person for it. You're not less beloved by Hashem for it. There's the job of the Kohen. He's got to do his job, and that's it. And the Levi does his job, and that's it. The same way the sun has its job, the moon has its job, water has its place, land has its place, morning, night, all have their place and their limitations. In the spiritual world, it works the same way. The world needs these limitations, these boundaries, parameters, the same way it has it in the physical world.
Would have responded saying, well, we know that there are instances in history when Hashem changed his mind. You know, by Noah, he wanted to destroy the city, somebody took him out of it, maybe he'll change his mind here too.
Yeah, but if that's what he's trying to do, then again, you know, so look how that was done. Abraham davened to Hashem, right? There's a way of doing it. Korach may have thought that way, but he clearly was going up, he was clearly rebelling against the authority of Moshe. I mean, Moshe's authority was pretty clearly established at the giving of the Torah. Right? It's a little bit different. And if somehow or another in his mind, look, you're right. You know, the people who needed Pesach Sheni came about because they came right to Moshe and say, why should we be left out? Okay, so if Korach has a problem, he should come to Moshe and say, yeah, no. Is there any way it could work out I could be the Kohen Gadol too? That's not what he did. He challenged most of the entire authority, tried to tear down his authority, tried to tear down the validity of his nebuah.
Yeah, so this is what we're talking about, jealousy, make one blind,
right. Right. In his mind, maybe in his mind, the Kibbutz is saying, in his mind, oh, I'm going to show the Ribbono Shel Olam how much I want, it's going to change things around. But, you know, it's, I mean, Rashi says in prophecy he saw that he was going to have descendants. The problem is, he didn't realize, as Rashi says in the prophecy, part of the problem that what he missed in the prophecy is that his sons were going to back out on him at the end, and they survived. That's why he was able to have descendants. Shmuel Anami says descendant. Okay. Now, to bring out this idea in another interesting way, I'm going to turn back to Parshas Nasai. And page 748. Okay, so the beginning of Parshas Nasai reads, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Nasai Esreish b'nei Gershon gamheim leveis avesam l'shbuchaysam. Take a census of the sons of Gershon, also they, according to that of their fathers, according to their families. Now, what's going on here, a little review. At the Parshas Bamidbar, Hashem says, count, take a sentence of the children of Kahas. Right? Kahas was the family that carried the most important parts of the Mishkan. Right? Carried the Arim, they carried the basic, the Mishkan and all its vessels. And they were counted first. And then Hashem says, count the sons of Gershon. But Hashem doesn't just say, count the sons of Gershon. Count the sons of Gershon, also they. What's the also they? And a lot of Mefarshim focus on these two words. What lies in that, in those words, gamheim, also they? So Moshe Feinstein said, also they, was to bring out the following. The Hashem didn't want the sons of Gershon to think that the Bnei Kahas were counted because they carry the holiest articles. But they who carry lesser holy articles, you know, they're not as worthy of being counted. They're not as worthy of being counted. Or maybe their counting isn't as important. And therefore, Hashem says, Nasai Yisraish B'nei Gershon Gamheim. Count them also. Don't think that B'nei Kahas, their counting is more important than you. You're also counted, just like them. Your counting is just as important as their counting. And the wording in Ramesha Feinstein's, in the wording from Ramesha Feinstein's Sefer is, Ve'en chiluk ma'asha oise l'kavit shemayim, there's no difference what one does for the honor of heaven, im nesiasa arin, whether it means carrying the arin, im nesiasa krashim, or it's just carrying the boards. Mikevin sha'oise mitzvah Hashem, you're doing the will of Hashem, then there is no difference between you. You're all participating in the honor of Hashem. And that's your intention. There's no difference between the two of you. It happens to be that Rabbi Shimon decided he's going to do that. Clearly, everybody would love to do that. It's clearly a more honorable thing. It's a very great merit. But the destiny of that person is to have that opportunity, and your destiny is not. But it's not going to affect you and make you any of a lesser person for it. You know, we give honor to a Kohen, right? We give honor to a Kohen. Why? Because of what he represents and what he does. So yes, he gets more honor than the rest of us do. But that's because, at the end of the day, Hashem decided his destiny is to do these very important things. There, and he represents the servant, the divine servant, the Kabbalist, the service in the Beis HaMikdash. And for what he does and represents, he deserves a lot of honor. But no one is lesser of a person, no one is less beloved than Rabbeinu Shalaylam because of the fact that one person has the greater honor over the other, or the greater merit over the other. Now, I want to share with you a very interesting. This is just an interesting. I can't find the right word, but just this is a very interesting little thought. So, Moshe says in the morning there's going to be a test. Everybody's going to bring a pan with the ketores, with the incense. They're going to offer the incense, and whoever is meant to be bringing the incense, he will survive. Everybody else ain't going to make it. Korach, we know, at the end, him and Dasan Avirim, they were swallowed up. So the question is asked like this. The Gemara in Yoma says that the man, the food that fell from heaven, depending on how righteous you were, that's how close it fell to your tent. If you were a righteous person, it fell right by your tent. If you were an evil person, a sinful person, you had to go out to get it. And if you were somewhere in the middle, it fell somewhere in the middle. So clearly people had a very open lesson every day as to who's who, and, you know, it was a lesson to you, it was a lesson whatever in front of other people also. That's an interesting part of it also. Okay, so the question is asked, why did Moshe have to go through this whole business? with the fire pans and with the earth. What do you need it for? In the morning, everybody will wake up, see where the man is. And Korach's man is not going to be where it should be. If Korach is really wrong here, his man will not be at his front door. And that would be the way of being able to see that Korach is not right. So why was that enough of a sign? Interesting question, huh? So the answer that's brought down from the Sefer, that so there's an idea brought down in the Sefer Shevet Musar, brings down a medrash that teaches that machlekes, quarreling and discord, is so severe that on the day of Korach's rebellion, the man didn't fall. There was no man. Korach, he had 250 men involved in machlekes, a quarrel. We know that morning everybody came to watch, which made Hashem very upset. So machlekes is such a severe thing that because of that, the man didn't fall. On the day of the Chet HaEgel, it fell. You know why? Because as much as they were worshiping idols, but they were united with each other. Oh, and they're a very similar idea that you find. It's like the first time I think I've heard this medrash. There's a similar idea that's brought out by Achav. The king Achav was a very wicked king. But it says that he won all his wars. Why? Because there was unity. No one spoke lashon hara about each other. That's the example that they give. That's the example that they give of when there's actus, when there's unity, it protects the Jewish people even in the most sinful state. So the chayt to egel.
I think I saw it in Sanhedrin.
Okay. So the day of the chayt to egel, the man falls, but not on the day machlekes of Korach. That's how serious quarreling is. That's how serious strife is. Okay. So that answers the question. Man couldn't be used. Couldn't be used. And maybe Moshe Rabbeinu understood that. He understood that. There's not going to be any man. Now, but if there was no man that day, what did they eat? Were they fasting that day? Everybody had to fast that day? So the answer I saw brought down is that at the end of the day, you know, it's not like there was no one around them. There were nomads around. It's not like there was no one to buy food from. They didn't have to buy food from anyone because they had the man. But there were the opportunities of buying food, which just right now I realize, you know, it's interesting. If there was opportunities to buy food, right, we know in Parshas Vayelech they're complaining about the money.
Yeah.
Go buy. Maybe they weren't allowed to buy. But in a situation where, again, here, if there is no money, right, you got to go buy food. So they have to find nomads, other people around the area to go buy food from. But the money couldn't be the litmus, couldn't be the test. Because of the fact that when there's machlekes, when there's quarreling, no man.
Well, in fact, I believe this is one of the reasons that the tradition is so against lashon hara, because that causes distress,
right? Quarreling. Right. Okay. Now, the next thought. So let's go back to page 822. So pasuk vav, two lines from the top. Zeis asu. This is what you should do. Kachulacha machtais, take fire pans. Karech v'chaladase, karech and all his assembly. Usnu v'hen eish, put fire into it. V'simu alein kateres, put incense on it. Lefnei Hashemach, in front of Hashem tomorrow. V'haya ha'ish asher yivchar Hashem hu hakadosh. The man that Hashem chooses, he is the holy one. Rav lachem b'nei Levi. It is too much for you, O offspring of Levi. What does that mean? So Rashi says, Rav lachem b'nei Levi, Dabar gadol amarti lachem. I'm telling you something very important, something very big. Realize what I'm telling you now. I'm telling you something very, very important. Dabar gadol amarti lachem. I'm telling you something big. And the big is that, you know, somebody's going to make it, only one person is going to make it, and no one else. Now, Rashi continues to say like this. Were they fools? Shekach hisra behem v'kibul aleim l'karev. Moshe warned them, and they still went and did it. So what are they, foolish? Ela rather, hem chatu al nafshesem. They sinned on their souls. They were responsible for their lives. What do these words of Rashi mean exactly? Rashi's commenting that these people are fools. How stupid can you be? And the answer is, Chatan Avshesem. What does that mean? And Rashi's wording is Ella. Rather, they're responsible. That's not answering the question. Or is it answering the question? I mean, if the point is they were fools, Taka, all right. Were they not fools? Yeah, they were fools. What's the Ella? Rather. Unless Rashi means to say, in truth, they were fools and negligent. Hard to know. But the wording is an interesting wording. But this is, it's worthwhile to talk about a fascinating approach that the Netziv has about these 250 men that accompanied, that were part of the assembly of Korach. Rashi breaks them down. You've got the 250 men. They're at the end going to die when they bring in the Keteris. Korach, right? I think the Gemara says maybe both things happened to him. I'm not sure. But Korach for sure got swallowed up. But that's maybe for sure got swallowed up. Now, but they're divided, right? They died in one manner, and Korach and Dasanim died in a different manner. They died because a fire came down and burnt their neshamas. A spiritual death of sorts. Korach was swallowed up alive to the depths of Gehenna. One can make an argument that Korach got it worse. Korach and Dasanim got it worse. And you can say they got it worse because they were the instigators. The Netziv points out that number one, they're always separated. They're always mentioned separate, the 250 people. Number one. Number two, we know that after they die, so Hashem says, right, this is on page 826, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Leim, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Amar al Elazar ben Aaron HaKoyen, say to Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKoyen, V'yaremes HaMachtes Med HaSreifa. He should pick up all the fire pans from amongst the burning. V'sa'esh Rehala, throw away the fire. Ki Kodeshu, for they, these fire pans, have become sanctified. As Machtes HaKatoyim Ma'ilam Ben Avshesem, the fire pans of these who sinned in their souls. And you shall make them into flat sheets of covering for the altar, because they offer them before Hashem, they were sanctified. Yisrael will be a sign for the Jewish people. All right. So now you have all the fire pans that these men died with. You're taking them all; they were sanctified, and you're going to bang them out into a flat sheet, and they become a cover for the mizbeach. Isn't that weird? Isn't that kind of strange? You know, you think about it, well, you know, you're right, it was sinful, but they were sanctified at the end of the day, the Keteres was offered, and whatever you're going to say. But it is kind of strange that these things used for a terrible sin now become part of the Mizbeach. True, they're a sign for what happened. But again, it becomes a part of the Mizbeach.
It was not used for the sin, it was used to decide.
But they did a sin when they did it.
Pretty
serious one, would seem. So the Netziv says like this. The Netziv says there's a very big difference between 250 men and Korach, Dasan, and Aviram. Dasan, Aviram, we know, always had it in for Moshe. That we know. Korach, Rashi tells us, jealousy drove him. What drove these 250 men? So Rashi says, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Shechenai. Woe to the evil person, woe to his neighbors. You have to have good neighbors, or else you can get swallowed in. And you simply learn that what that means is that, yeah, you know, Korach got them worked up in the same way Korach wants to be the Kohen Gadol. He says, we should all be Kohanim Gadolim. Yeah, that's a good idea, and they all join up. That's what we typically learn. The Netziv says no. The Netziv says that these men, these 250 men, they were absolutely righteous. There wasn't a tinge of jealousy in their body. Not a tinge. Their entire desire was to experience the closeness to Hashem that comes from being Keteres. They wanted so badly to experience the service of a Kohen Gadol, that encounter with Hashem that a Kohen Gadol has when he does anything. They wanted it. And they wanted it ready to kill themselves for it. Moshe Rabbeinu told them, right, you're not going to make it. And you know what? And they didn't say this to Moshe, but you know, basically, what was going on in their minds? it's all right. We're ready to give up our lives for that experience. It's like, Hashem is going to forgive me for this one, because I'm doing it all to be close with him. In their minds, their motive was completely l'shem shemayim. Completely l'shem shemayim, says the Netziv. But you know, you can have good intentions, and good intentions, but there's a saying, right? Yeah. The path to Gehenna is, I'm saying, you can have good intentions.
Especially the road to hell is paved.
If paved with good intentions. I'm not sure if that's exactly like this, but the point is that good, you can have good intentions, but everything, every part of you, good, bad, has to be understood. That's the five limitations of what Hashem wants. The bad can mix into your good, and all you're thinking about is good. It's all you want is good. All you want is closest to Hashem. But there's a way to approach Hashem, there's a way not to approach Hashem. These 50 people wanted so badly to experience the closeness that comes from doing the Aveda, divine worship in the Mishkan, that they were ready to give up their lives for it. And the only chance that they had for it is if they joined up with Korach. Korach is, his idea is, he's getting up, he's saying, we should all be Kohanim Gedolim. And again, even Korach, if you ask Korach, if you looked at Korach, he also saw a man that was craving for closeness to Hashem. But the sages tell us he had a different motivation also. He had a jealousy motivation. There was no jealousy motivation with 250 men. Some learned they also were jealous, I believe, because they're from the tribe of Reuven, who should have been the firstborn. They had something, they were able to have an excuse also. But the Netziv doesn't learn like that. The Netziv learns their entire intention was completely l'shem shemayim, completely for the sake of closest to Hashem. The only chance they had to do it is if they joined it with Korach. And when Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, you're going to die, it's all right. They'll die.
I have two comments.
Yeah.
One is that, of course, this story is very parallel to the sons of Aaron.
Well,
one of the explanations is that they
were... Yeah, it is very similar. Yes, 100%.
But they do not come out of it as heroes.
No, they didn't. Neither are these people heroes.
Well, except their utensils go up.
Okay, all right. So you want to know why don't we have the same thing from our incense?
Yeah.
That's a very interesting question. The question being, well, if our incense also were probably,
yeah,
we're looking...
Right.
Well, the answer would have to be, according to Netziv, that their motives were not as pure as these men. That you'd have to say. And when you study the whole story of the sons of Aaron, there was some lack of purity to their what motivated them. You know, it wasn't the same thing. But again, you're bringing up a good point. You'd have to say there was a difference, and it's possible to make an argument there was a difference. But that's how the Netziv learns. So therefore, if you want to learn this in Rashi, Rashi's saying, were they fools? The answer is rather they sinned with their souls. These people were willing to give up their souls, and they sinned with their souls. The desire to become close to Hashem that came from serving, they're ready to give up their lives for it, that was their sin. Because there's no such thing as approaching Hashem not following the way Hashem wants you to do it.
Well, right, and this is my second comment, that I don't like this explanation, because one can almost argue that, you know, today I kill myself to get closer to Hashem.
Which is wrong. That's why they died the way they died. At the end of the day, though, what the Netziv is saying is, and this is an idea that we find in other places, a really pure intention doesn't go to waste. The Halshach says the pure intentions of the daughters of Lot is why Mashiach comes from them. A truly pure intention does not go to waste. And they had a pure intention. They were wrong. They were misguided. And they suffered greatly for it. But it can't be ignored. And therefore, their parents were sanctified. Because at the end of the day, it was brought with the intentions of coming close to Hashem. And therefore, it could be used now. Again, it's used more as a sign. It's used as a sign not to do this. But it can become part of the Mizbeach because of the intention. Right. So, and that's the Netziv's idea. I just want to conclude that I saw a very interesting lesson to be taken from this. And this is, you know, it's similar to the whole idea of Korach, just in a different way. You know, you can be jealous of somebody's spirituality too, right? Somebody is able to accomplish things in spirituality more than you are, and you're jealous of that person. You know, why can't I be that way? Of course, every person has to strive in ruchnius and spirituality to the best that they can produce. But if destiny decides that your mission is in one thing and somebody else's mission is in another thing, and it's a mission that it seems that he's got a greater opportunity for spiritual accomplishments and you have less of an opportunity, the lesson of this story of Kairach and this idea of the Netziv is that, again, you can still be close. You'll be close to Hashem. What you need to become close to Hashem is what Hashem has given you. And what he has is what he needs to become close to Hashem. And it's not that you're lacking in your closeness to Hashem because you're not doing exactly what he's doing. And there's a famous story that is that's told of that Reb Yisrael Salanter had a student, his name was Raftali Amsterdam. And he one time told his Rebbe, I'm not sure if it happened on Purim or not. For some reason in my head it happened on Purim, but I'm not sure if it did. He said to the Reb Yisrael Salanter, if I had the head of the Shagas Aryeh was from the Achreinim, was a tremendous genius. If I had the head of the Shagas Aryeh, the heart of the Yisoid V'Sharash HaAvayda, and the midas, the traits of the Rebbe, then I could be a true servant of Hashem. And now that Yisrael answered, Naftali, in Yiddish it's Medayin Kup, Medayin Haaretz, Medayin Midas, which means with your head, with your heart, and your character traits, that's how you can be the Eved Hashem, the servant of Hashem that you need to be. That's this idea. That we're always wondering about things. How come I'm here and how come I'm there? And it's difficult. But there's a point where hopefully a person realizes that Hashem has given you this path and him that path. And in his eyes, you're both the same. And you can attain your closeness to Hashem in your path, as much as it doesn't seem, as much as it, you'd like a different path, but this is your path. Have a good night. Thank you.